A SimplyScripts.com presentation, read by iScript.com. Rydale's Prison by Philip Whitcroft. Exterior, North York Moors Prison, twilight. High on the North York Moors, a bleak and inhospitable place, a large dark prison is surrounded by boggy peat and a shroud of wet gray mist. Interior, prison dining hall, same time. Prisoners are eating dinner at lined-up tables in a hall with high ceilings and traces of ornate trim. A young, disoriented prisoner, Danny, 19, turns away from the food counter with his tray and pauses, unsure where to go and sit. He slowly steps forward and sees that many of the tables are full, and he is not welcome at others. Across the room, he notices a table with three older prisoners. One of the older prisoners, Francis, 60, in fair health, notices him looking at them and waves for him to join them. Francis, "Hello, young man. You're welcome to sit with us until you figure out where you really belong. I'm Francis." Jim, 82, frail and weather-beaten, sitting next to Francis, is uneasy about meeting the stranger. Danny. "I'm Danny." Danny sits down opposite Francis, next to Seymour, 71, drawn and a little academic. Francis. "These old duffers are Seymour and Jim. Do they bring you straight here from the court?" Danny. "Yeah, I was told Leeds was full." Seymour. "Yes, and this place is as well. But that doesn't stop more people coming." Jim. "I know what they're going to do." Seymour. "Will you stop going on about that?" Jim. "But they will. I'm telling you that they will. I saw the guards looking at the barriers." Seymour. "So what if they do? It's only rooms." Jim. No. Something should be left alone." There is an awkward silence. Danny is confused, but focuses on eating his food. Francis has heard this discussion before and realizes it makes no sense to Danny. Francis. "They're talking about the Rydale offices." Danny. "Rydale offices?" Francis. "Rydale, as in the trading magnate?" Danny is blank. The older prisoners shake their heads as they realize that Danny does not understand the significance of this. Seymour. "Do young people know about anything?" Danny. "Sorry." Francis decides to explain what they are talking about. Francis. "This prison was not always a prison. Look up there, around the walls." Francis points to the classical cornicing around the room and the tops of the pillars that are ornately decorated. Francis. "They don't decorate prisons like that on purpose. This was the stately home of the Rydale family." Seymour. "God only knows why he would build such a home on the moors." Francis. "True, but he did. Using slave trading money, and probably some of the slaves, Rydale built this beast of a place." Jim. "This place destroys souls." Danny is uneasy and looks around as if to find somewhere else to sit. Seymour. "Don't listen to him. Buildings don't destroy people. Other people do." Danny. "What happened?" Seymour. "Old man Rydale wanted all his family with him, and they, the children and their grandchildren, had no choice. They were all waiting for a share of his money, so they all moved in here." Seymour pauses and looks at Francis, deciding if they should continue the story. Francis. "Look, it's a long story. A prisoner probably made it all up, and everyone has fallen for it ever since." Jim. I heard it before this place was ever a prison, from a Moor's shepherd. They should have knocked it all down and stayed that way." Bang, bang, bang. A guard, 45, gruff and mean, bangs a metal plate against a door frame, and all goes quiet. Guard. "That's it. Dinner's over. Back to your cells. Those of you who just arrived, line up at the back of the line." Interior. Cell corridor. A little later. The prisoners are all walking in a line along a corridor of cells. Francis, Seymour, and Jim are together in the middle of the line, and Danny is at the back, being followed by the guard. Halfway along the corridor on the right-hand side is an archway entrance that was barricaded up. One of the guards is removing the central panels of the barricade. Jim. "Dear God, they're opening up." The prisoners walk past the opening, staying as far away as possible, but peering curiously through into the blackness. The end of the line reaches the opening and goes a little past it. Guard. "Where do you think you newbies are going? You're in here." The four new inmates at the back of the line stop and stand looking at the entrance. Guard. "Grab a cot, blanket, and torch. Each of you, and get in there." Next to the entrance is a pile of fold-out beds, blankets, and flashlights. The prisoners pick up one of each. Even the guard looks uncomfortable and will not go in first. Guard. "In line. As you were, in you go." The prisoners shuffle back into the same line they were in before, and the new prisoner, who is first, looks very uncomfortable about being first. But he turns on his flashlight and goes through. Danny is the last of the new prisoners to go through, and he is followed by the guard. On the other side, dimly lit by the flashlights, is a short corridor, ornately decorated, with the wallpaper and fixtures still in place, but damp, dirty, and run down. The prisoners stop in the middle of the corridor. There are two doors on the left, one on the right, and a large door at the end with the word Rydale carved into the stone lintel above it. Guard. "You boys are lucky. You get a room each. You two into those ones. You into that one."
The guard points to each of the first three prisoners, and at the doors on the sides of the corridor, which leaves only Danny. Guard.
And you. You get the big one.
They all look around at each other. Guard.
Don't just stand there, get in. And don't use your torches too much. It'll be a long time before you get any more batteries.
The prisoners jump towards their doors. The first three each arrive at theirs first, and open them to reveal small side offices, without furniture, once used by assistants. They each step warily into the rooms, and begin setting up their beds. Guard.
And don't get any funny ideas just because you have no locks and bars. The dogs and shooters aren't going to care.
Danny moves towards the large door, and notices a big lock on the door. He pauses, and the guard hangs back. Guard.
Well, try it!
Danny grips the handle, turns the heavy, loud mechanism with a clunk, and slowly opens the door. Inside is a cavernous office with high ceilings and a tall glass window. The walls are paneled in dark oak and broad, empty oak shelving. Much of the furniture is gone, but towards the window is an enormous, heavy desk in the same style as the walls. Guard,
don't disturb anything.
The guard closes the door as he leaves, and Danny gets a chill down his spine as he continues to look around the room. High in the center of the damp ceiling is a chandelier with drips of water falling almost rhythmically from one crystal to the next. To each side of the room, there is a large fireplace. Dominating one of them is a portrait of a huge, intense, serious man, dressed in Victorian clothes, standing as a lord of all he surveys. Above the other fireplace is a much smaller portrait of a pretty young girl with a quizzical expression, dressed unnaturally in bejeweled black. She is standing quite rigidly to attention, and is surrounded by jeweled toys of gold and silver. Under the picture is a label, Beloved Clarissa. The room has one other door next to the fireplace with the girl's portrait. This door is smaller than the entrance, but has a similar lock on it. Danny shakes himself away from looking around, and finds a spot out in the open space near the large door to begin setting up his bed. Interior, Rydell's office, later in the night. Danny is restlessly asleep on the bed with the room dimly lit by moonlight from outside. He starts awake as the smaller door in the room begins to rattle. The door rattles at first a little, and then much more heavily. Danny is frightened and clutches tightly to his blanket. The rattling fades away and is replaced by a scraping noise. Eventually, the scraping fades away also, but Danny is now totally awake. Interior, Rydell's office, dawn. The dawn is breaking, and light is coming in through the uncurtained, very dirty windows. Danny has not gone back to sleep, but is comforted by the dawn and gets up. He sniffs the air and touches the damp on the oak-paneled desk before looking at the tall windows. He reaches up and unlatches one of the large windows before giving it a push. The window opens just a little, and he is relieved to be able to breathe some of the fresh morning air from outside. Through the gap, he sees a glimpse of the high barbed wire-topped walls and one of the watchtowers. Guard.
Come on out here, you lads. The workshops won't wait all day.
Danny quickly moves out of the door, along the short corridor, through the hole with the other new prisoners, and joins the back of the line of prisoners going towards the dining hall. Interior, prison dining hall, moments later. Danny has been given his breakfast and turns away from the food counter. This time he looks quickly towards the table he sat at before, and sure enough, the same three older prisoners are in the same places. He goes over and sits down. The others are wary of him and concerned. Initially, they don't say anything. Francis. Tough night? Danny. Yeah, I guess. Francis. It does get a little easier. Jim is agitated. Seymour has tried not to let his curiosity get the better of him, and eventually fails. Seymour.
So, what are the rooms like?
Danny. I think I got old man Rydell's office. Jim throws his hands to his head and gasps in anguish before clutching for a small pendant he is wearing around his neck. Francis and Seymour look at each other. Seymour.
Old man Rydell's office?
The old men go quiet and won't look at Danny anymore.
Danny.
Well, so what was the story you were telling me yesterday?
Francis. It's like I said, Danny. It's probably just a story. Francis thinks he has successfully shut down the subject. Seymour is too mouthy to let that happen.
Seymour. They say that Rydell loved nothing so much as money, and his children were all the same. Only they didn't have any, because the old man clutched it all to himself. They lived on meager handouts waiting for the day he was dead.
Francis. They floated like vultures, those long years, waiting for the feast.
Seymour. There was but one ray of joy amongst them all, Rydell's only grandchild, born out of wedlock and killed her mother in childbirth. But Rydell loved her nonetheless.
Danny. The girl in the portrait. Clarissa. The others look around awkwardly.
Jim. Yes, Clarissa, that's what he said. Pretty, kind, and charming. Everything that her uncles and aunt were not. She'd play.
In Rydell's office. The old men pause. Again, it is Seymour who can't resist continuing the story.
Seymour. Each time Rydell would go away to London on business, he would lock his safe room and lock his office.
Francis. He couldn't have his children laying hands on money while he was away.
Seymour. Well, they say that Clarissa was hiding in a safe room one day when she was 10.
He locked the doors and went away, Francis. When he returned a month later, his children said they thought Clarissa had gone with them. They searched all around, but when old man Rydell opened his office and his safe room, there she was, lifeless inside. Danny has listened with growing horror to the story and is as white as a sheet. Interior, cell corridor, evening. The other prisoners are filing away, leaving the new prisoners at the barrier. Danny is petrified. The guard looks at him and smirks a little. Guard,
I see there's been some storytelling going on.
Danny, is there nowhere else?
We don't let prisoners pick and choose their cells. Any that asks to do so takes up the request with the governor.
Can I talk to the governor?
Sure you can. He's right here.
The guard lifts up his baton and pushes Danny's head hard against the wall with it. The baton is wedged right under Danny's eyes. Guard,
there he is, boy. What do you want to say to him?
Nothing. Nothing, sorry.
Well, okay. It's always good when communication is clear.
The guard lowers the baton and looks at Danny and the others. They all hustle through the barrier, along the short corridor, and into their rooms. Danny closes the door behind himself and then sinks to the floor, crying and cowering away from the pictures in the safe room door. A few miles away, a storm is brewing. Thunder rumbles and flickers of lightning light up the room. Exterior, North York Moor's prison, later in the night. The storm is around the prison. The wind is blowing hard. Lightning and thunder are heavy and close. The searchlights are sweeping the grounds. Interior, Rydell's office, same time. Danny is on his bed in the furthest corner, away from the safe room door. He is not asleep. He is under the blanket, staring in horror at the safe room door. Danny, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. He grips tight to the blanket and pulls it over his head. He begins to feel better. He breathes a little more easily and starts relaxing a bit. The rattling begins. At first it is quiet, becoming louder. Danny hears it and is struck by fear. He whimpers and cringes, still under the blanket. He tries to bring himself to look out from under the blanket. The scratching starts. Danny, Clarissa, it's okay. Please, Clarissa, please. The rattling and scratching continues. Danny pulls the blanket down and looks at the safe room door. It is moving and shaking in its frame. Danny jumps from his bed and scuttles over to sit in behind the huge bulk of the desk near the window. Danny, why didn't they hear you? I know you shouted. Why didn't they hear you? The lightning flashes, and behind Danny's head, all over this end of the desk, are doodles, scratchings, and drawings by a young child. The lightning flashes again, and prominent amongst the scratching it says, Clarissa Rydell. There is a banging from the safe room door. Tap, tap, tap. Bang, bang, bang. Danny starts, and then understands something. Danny, they did hear you, didn't they? The money. Oh, God, they heard you. Bang. The safe room door shakes to its foundations. Bang. A crack appears in the door. Danny looks around at the desk and sees the scratchings lit up by the lightning. He jumps up in terror and sees the crack in the door. He backs against the wall near the window. Danny, I'm not one of them. Your aunts and uncles are not here. Please, Clarissa. There is an almighty bang and the door crashes in spraying debris across the room. Danny, no. Danny shields up against the debris, but is struck by some of it. He jumps up to the window, pushes it full open, and jumps out. Danny, no, Clarissa, no! He scrambles quickly away across the courtyard and struggles to get to his feet. He gets a little way away from the office and looks back at the building. As he looks through the rain, he sees that on the other side of the safe room door there is no room. The only thing there is the newly fallen tree that was in that corner of the courtyard and has now fallen against and through the safe room door. He begins to breathe a little more easily. He smiles a little and wipes the rain from his brow. Bang! A single gunshot rings out in the darkness. Danny wheels around sideways as the impact throws into the wet ground. Lying motionless on the ground, he stares towards Rydell's office as his life slips away. Interior, prison dining hall, next day. The three old prisoners sit quietly together, contemplating what has happened. Francis,
poor boy.
Seymour,
I guess we should have told him that old man Rydell pulled down the safe room.
Jim,
more than